G'day team, welcome to another instalment of The U Project. Slow down a little bit, Craig. It's episode number 334, that's right. Do you know sometimes, Tiff? Hi, Tiff.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
Yeah, real good, thanks. Oh, yeah. You know, some people's...
Am I a bit squeaky?
No, I think I was. Some people say in the comments, is the audio at 1.5? Like the audio seems really fast. How do I slow it down? And I think, because I did one the other day with Bobby and Bobby doesn't have a normal voice anyway. And I reckon Bobby talks at legit 1.5 to 2 normal speed, right? And then when he gets excited, it ramps up even more. And when I'm on a roll, I don't talk slowly either. And so every now and then I get this message that goes, slow the fuck down, Harps. I can't, I need to, you know, like you play podcasts on 1.5, don't you?
Yeah, so I was just about to say that, and when I have Bobby on, he's the only guest ever that even I have strategically put some pauses in so that people's brains can catch up with a statement that he's just made.
Yeah.
Everyone else, I'll cut too many pauses out because I'm impatient enough.
Yeah, well, you know, on your podcast app, folks, in the iTunes one or in the Apple one anyway, you can actually vary the speed. You can listen at half speed. You can listen at 1.5. On Spotify, which is where Rogan's at, yeah, you can go in quarters. So it's like 1.25, 1.5, 1.75.
All the way up to 3.5 now.
Is it?
Yep.
I just leave it at one. So anyway, today I thought we would have a chat about beliefs. This is kind of further to our conversation around thinking. We're always, as you know, we're always talking on this show about the human condition, and part of that is the way that we think and the way that we believe and the way that our thinking and our beliefs impact our behavior and our outcomes and our relationships and our mental health and our emotional health and our life in general. So I know that you have a few questions for me, and we're going to try and keep this relatively succinct because you do have a tendency to be somewhat verbose, don't you?
Well, isn't that the pot calling the kettle black?
Well, I do think Craig Anthony Harper. Well, I did have on my grade 5 report card, Sister Catherine. God bless her. Sister Catherine didn't miss any of the cakes at play lunch. I'll give you the tip. Bless her. And Sister Catherine wrote on my report card that Craig has a tendency to be somewhat loquacious in class and distracting for the other children. Loquacious being very talkative.
Oh, thank you. You must have seen that I didn't know what that word meant.
Yeah, loquacious. He has a tendency to be somewhat loquacious. I'm not sure my mum knew either. She may have had to.
She was probably really proud. She thought it was some academic.
Yeah, always very loquacious. What's that mean? I think it means he's a genius. I'm not sure. No, he's a fat little fuck that tries to steal Sister Catherine's cakes and distracts all the other little fuckers up the back and talks way too much. That was pretty much my standard report card.
I didn't have very glowing reviews myself, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. And then at the end of every kind of, you know, they'd write whether it was geography or maths or this or that, and then the last sentence would be, must try harder. Must try harder. Craig has a lot of talent, but I used to get that. Craig is, Craig's, you know, smart-ish, but.
I don't know if this is confirmation bias based on my beliefs, funnily enough, but I feel like a lot of the people in this sort of podcasting and mentoring space all had similar report cards where they wouldn't shut up in class and were always in trouble.
Yeah, I think maybe. Well, see, yeah, that's interesting you say that. Let's talk about that. Why is that? I think that is because sometimes people who are, not all, but some people who are really good at, I'm not saying you or me are, but we must be okay at it because we do all right, but people who are not bad on the old, you know, the conversation, so communication, be it written or spoken or whatever, like who have better social and emotional intelligence and conversational and situational awareness and all of those things aren't always super academic because it's a different kind of intelligence. And ironically, I've never thought of myself as academic, and I can do academia, but I'm not academic. It's like I can change a tire, but I'm not mechanical. I can make a meal, but I'm not a natural chef. You know what I mean? And so for me, and not that I don't want to do it, but doing academia is a thing that I kind of choose to do and can do. But I think, yeah, I think a lot of people who are quite, you think about some of the best actors and communicators and comedians and people who are inspirational and even philosophers and, you know, people who just create great connection. How many of them had learning disabilities? You think about Matt Shepard that we had on recently, who's a fucking amazing human, great, like empathy, awareness, social, emotional intelligence, off the chart, failed year 11, and now arguably the best flight paramedic in Victoria, who hated school and did shit at school until he found something he was passionate about. So that was a very long-winded comment off the back of your report card comment, but I agree with you.
It's interesting though, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
It kind of leads into this whole conversation around beliefs. Well, now I've got beliefs in my head and I'm hearing it in everything you say.
Well, here's one of the things about beliefs. We have a belief in our culture that intelligence can be measured by sitting down and filling out this paper and answering these 100 questions. And based on how you go with these 100 questions, these arbitrary questions, and we give the same questions or a version of the same questions to a plethora of human beings who all have different skill sets and different kinds of intelligence and different abilities. And then we go, oh, he's intelligent, he's not intelligent. She's smart, she's not smart. And we're getting out of that a little bit now, but, you know, I've spoken about this before, but if you want to watch a fucking mind-blowing video, it's on TED and it's by Sir Ken Robinson. Sir Ken Robinson, and it's called...
Is it Imagination?
Pardon?
Is it something about imagination?
No, it's called How Schools Are Killing Creativity.
You're the second person that's told me to watch
something, and it's fucking amazing. And basically talks about intelligence and different kinds of intelligence. And, you know, there are some people like that, you know, we have this, I even listened to Joe Rogan the other day talking about somebody who was talking about all these academics. And immediately we go, all these PhDs and academics, you know, these are the smartest people in the world working on. I go, no, they're not. No, they're not. I'm not saying they're not smart, but just because they're PhDs doesn't mean they're the smartest people in the world. And just because, you know, he or she works on a construction site doesn't mean they're not brilliant. You know, we kind of pigeonhole people based on these arbitrary measures that we think, oh, well, he did a PhD, she did a PhD, or she's a professor, or she's written 10 books, or she discovered this, or, you know.
Do you know what else, though? And I literally had this a bit of this conversation on a recent podcast on school and beliefs and being smart. Because when I was at school, I was really good at maths. I was really good at English. I was really good at science. But anything that didn't interest me, I was also really disruptive, very. But anything that didn't interest me, like social science and geography, I got in high school when I should have known better, sent out of the room for giggling uncontrollably. It was like a trigger. Every time I'd walk in the room, I'd sit with the wrong crowd and then I'd start laughing and then I couldn't physically stop until there were tears rolling. So I'd get sent out like a child. And so I didn't learn. I didn't learn geography. I didn't learn about the world. And then later on in life, when people talk about, where, you know, going to Europe or Paris, or, you know, I'd had no idea where in the world these places were. I didn't know if Europe and Africa were even the same place. And so the story in my head then was, fuck, I'm not very smart. I don't even know this, and everyone knows this. So then there's this belief starts to cultivate that I'm pretty stupid. I'm not very smart. Straight A's in anything. In anything that I did sit and listen to, but yeah, it's really funny, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's, you know, we all have, trust me, we all have those stories of how stupid we are. Like, there's virtually nobody that I've ever met that doesn't have, on some level, they don't feel stupid about something or a fraud or inadequate or flawed or, you know, but the thing is, if you never look at a globe or you never pay attention to, you know, geography, or, well, you can't know what you haven't learned, you know, and you can't forget something that you haven't learned yet, you know, but you could literally spend a month just looking at the globe and reading about different countries and where they are and populations and religion and culture, and you'll learn more in a month than you have in the last 35 years. And but you're no smarter. You're not more intelligent. You just know more stuff. See, this is the thing. We confuse, and this is a good belief kind of expose as well, we confuse people who know a lot with people who are intelligent. And sometimes people who know a lot are intelligent, but sometimes people who know a lot are just really good at remembering stuff. And sometimes people who don't have that same level of memory in their data bank, they're highly intelligent, but in a different way. They're highly intelligent with creativity and with problem solving and with building something out of nothing and with reading social situations and with building rapport and with being able to manage a group of people or lead a team. And these are all instinctive and intuitive, organic abilities that just live, and they have a whole different kind of intelligence, and it's fucking incredible intelligence. But it's not about explaining, you know, what continent Kenya's in. It's not about talking about what's the cultural kind of, you know, fucking overriding operating system of wherever, or, you know, it's, you know, there's a difference. And that's why there are some brilliant academics and some academics that are, you know, kind of practically silly and a bit socially clunky. And if you threw a ball to them, it'd hit them in the face. And they wouldn't know how to make a fucking toasted cheese sandwich, you know, but they can explain, you know, the Big Bang to you. And then there are other people who, you know, and it's not one or the other. So I think intelligence is, I believe intelligence is misunderstood and misexplained. And I think a lot of the people that try to push the idea that intelligence is about, you know, you're a result on an IQ test is generally that's from people who do well on an IQ test.
Which, funnily enough, doesn't sound so smart after all.
No.
All right, let's lead into a question on belief. Talk about what the role of belief is.
So I think beliefs are part of our, firstly, we all have hardwired beliefs, don't we? We rarely think about where our beliefs came from. In fact, we rarely think about our beliefs too critically, as in too specifically. Like we don't really, we go, hang on, where did this belief come from? Does it work? Does it not work? Does it serve me? Is it mine? Is it mum? Is it dad's? But generally speaking, and did I just adopt it? Generally speaking, beliefs, the role of beliefs, I guess, is to help us figure out behavior and direction and choices and how to navigate life. Like if I believe that being a good person is paramount, well, then that makes a lot of decisions easier. If I believe that eating junk food is not great for me, then that makes a lot of social situations a lot more manageable and clear. If I believe that being nice to people and respecting and being aware in social situations is important, then that is that will help me navigate conversations and problem solving and negotiations and leadership and doing a podcast. Like when I have really clear beliefs about certain things, then that helps me navigate life on a practical level, on a professional level, on a personal level. You know, when I have a belief that hurting people is bad, which I think most of us do, then, you know, it stops me punching you in the face when you annoy me. Although I know you would punch me in the face because it's okay for a girl to punch a man in the face.
Melissa might get some emails about that statement.
About you punching me in the face.
It's about being okay for women to punch men in the face.
Oh, well, I think everyone knows I'm having fun. But yeah, that's, I mean, so the role of our beliefs is generally, it's part of our internal sat nav. And so, you know, and we can also put in the same basket as beliefs. We can put values, we can put standards, I guess. So, you know, when somebody asks me a question, I've brought this up before, but we had an opportunity to advertise or to have an advertiser on this podcast, in fact, which was an organization that sells grog, and they should be able to do that. And I have nothing against, you know, whoever it is that does that, but it's just not really consistent with me and it's not really consistent with my product. And for me, you know, that would kind of be out of alignment for me to be, because I've worked with alcoholics and I've been at the coalface of dealing with people who have had a lot of alcohol issues and problems. So I don't want to be selling. I don't want to be selling grog. I'm not against anyone else doing it. But when I have that standard or that value or I have that belief, then when that opportunity arises, I just default to, you know, my internal sat nav, which is all of that stuff I just spoke of, and it makes the decision really easy. So, you know, when we have core beliefs and clear beliefs, it helps us, you know, figure out life and navigate life more easily.
If you were to describe to someone that didn't really know the term belief, how would you describe what is a belief?
A belief is, well, it's interchangeable with the word faith. And it's believing in something that you can't prove. Because if you could prove it, you would have knowledge, right? And there's a separation between, see, I don't need to believe that you exist because I know you exist. I can see you, hear you. I can talk to you. I can interact with you, right? I don't need to have faith that Tiff exists. I might need to have faith that you'll do the right thing, right? Because I don't know what you'll do after this podcast. But
good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. But a belief is something that we regard as important and valuable, and it's our version of the truth, but it's not really. It's interesting that, because we go, well, no, this is true. And the thing is that the slippery nature of beliefs is we can't really prove them, which is why we have to, that's the difference between knowledge and belief. See, if I know something, like I know that Monday comes after Sunday, so I don't have to have faith in that because I've been through a lot of Sundays which have transitioned to Mondays. I know that if I take my phone now and I hold it up in the air and I let it go, I understand gravity. I understand that bitch is going to fall to the floor and probably break. So I don't need to believe it or have faith in it because I know what's going to happen.
So what do you think the repercussions would be if people were to, because I don't think that they do think of it like this, were to view a belief as a tool or a strategy? Because I think when I frame a belief as a tool or a strategy, then it becomes something that I now have control over, and it becomes more pliable.
Give me an example of a belief being a tool or a strategy.
Well, once I believed I was stupid.
But how's that a tool?
Because I can change that belief. Or not, maybe not a tool. Well, kind of a tool, because I can change, because I can use that belief and then I can alter it to get a better outcome because it's not serving me. There's probably a better way to articulate it. You're the articulation guru. You use big words that I don't know. So please put that in better English for me. Do you know what I mean? So rather than, right, I see as a belief is something that people would think is, I mean, just is. It's truth. It's fact. It's, this is a house. There is a God. I sleep in a bed. Like these are, they're true. So I believe it. So it's fact.
Well, some of them are. Like, you know, you sleep in a bed. So that's not a belief. That's knowledge. You believe there's a God. You can't prove there's a God. You don't know there's a God.
Exactly. But right? A lot of people aren't. A lot of people are so attached to their belief that they're not viewing it like it's something that they have control to change.
100%. Look, and the thing is that we want to be certain about our beliefs because our identity is intertwined with our beliefs. So when, for example, and I'm sorry to default to the Christian or the whatever, the Buddhist or the Muslim or whatever religious construct we want to use, it doesn't matter because it's not really about the religion, it's about the belief. But when your belief is intertwined, when your identity is intertwined with a certain belief, which is attached to certain behaviors and a certain way of being and living, and that belief has been part of you and you've been part of it your whole life or for years and years and years and years, then of course you don't want that to be false. You don't. And so, you know, you think about any group that their group, the existence of that group is built on a set of beliefs. So we vegans, we believe that eating meat is wrong. And total respect to vegans. And we atheists, we believe that there is no God. We believe in science. We believe in evidence. We believe in proof, blah, blah, blah. Cool. And so these are our beliefs and this is our standards and these are our values. We Christians believe in blah, 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 blah. Us polygamists, we believe that there can be multiple people in a marriage, not just two, but three, but four, and blah, 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 right? There are people that have certain lifestyles and certain operating systems based on beliefs, and those beliefs are intertwined with who they are and how they are. So when you challenge those beliefs, you challenge their identity. Mm. And so what that leads to is people, and I've been these people, is people being closed-minded, right? So when you believe something, like you think about what's the downside of an absolute belief? I absolutely believe this 100%, unequivocally. There's no chance that I'm wrong. So what you're saying is anyone who doesn't believe what I believe is wrong. What you're saying is there's no room in this for me to be wrong. And that's kind of a dangerous position to take, because you're assuming that you know all there is to know about that thing. Mm. You're assuming that you are on that, you are infallible, and you are assuming that anyone who doesn't agree with you or concur or think like you or share that belief is wrong and you are right. Whereas I think we are better off to go, this is what I believe or this is what I think, and I could be wrong. I don't think I'm wrong, but I could be wrong. And I'm okay with being wrong. And you know why I'm okay with being wrong? Because I'm wrong about things every fucking day. I've been wrong about things my whole life. So why would that stop now? I've had beliefs that I've had to change my whole life. And when I believe something and I completely shut down the possibility that what I believe could be either wrong or incomplete, then I'm shutting myself down to growth and learning.
How did you navigate that first? So let's talk about the first time you shifted a big belief. How did you even come to that place where you decided that you were going to explore further? And
okay, so that's a really good question. So for me, I'll be really specific. So for me was I had an overwhelming belief when I was a teenager that I was basically a piece of shit. I thought very lowly of myself. I thought I'm not good looking. I am not well built. I am not popular. I am not smart. I am not charismatic. I am not attractive to anyone. I am not athletic. And all of that was reinforced by my experiences. And it wasn't that people were terrible to me. It's just that I was the fat kid that got picked last. And I was the kid who wasn't awesome at school. I was average. And I was the kid who never had a girlfriend because I was fucking 30 kilos overweight. And I was the kid who, if I did get picked for something, I came last in it, and so on and so on. And there's no self-pity in that. That was just my story. And so I had all of these hardwired beliefs, which were very negative, and they were based on my experiences. And then, you know, then I think that quite often what happens in terms of creating a new operating system or new beliefs is that we have a moment in time, is that we have what I call a psychological or emotional tipping point where something happens. And then there's so much internal pain, emotional, psychological pain associated with that experience that we just go, fuck it. I'm going to be different. And however hard it is, it can't be more painful than the shit that I've been dealing with. And so for me, that was just, you know, I'm not going to bore everyone again, but that was a moment I had when I was 14, which just where I was just humiliated. And I'd actually really just humiliated myself because nobody else, you know, it was just the fact that I had to swim in front of a whole lot of people and be, you know, wearing a pair of fucking togs and no shirt. And I was what I thought was hideous. And I stood up on these starting blocks and I fucking wanted to die and I didn't want anyone to look at me, but everyone was looking at me and I wanted to be invisible, but I was the opposite of invisible. I was the most fucking noticeable because I was three times bigger than everyone. And then when I finished, I got out of that pool and I basically said to myself, never, ever, fucking ever is that happening again, ever. And it never happened again. It never happened again.
So how did you change? What was in your toolbox for changing the belief, to changing all of that that you'd believed for 14 years.
So what was in my toolbox was pain.
So how'd you, yeah, but how'd you use that? Because some people take their beliefs to the grave and they can fight them and they can, yeah, and they can be aware of them, but they never change them.
That's right. So the way that we, I mean, there are lots of ways to change beliefs, but like we change beliefs by pumping new information into our brain, by hanging around different people, by getting new messages, by being in different environments and having different experiences. But for me, the way that I've learned and grown and changed beliefs most profoundly for me, and it's different for everyone, but is by doing new things. Because when you have new experiences, you are chartering uncharted territory behaviorally and psychologically and emotionally. I'm now doing a thing I haven't done. I've never been the kid that ran. Oh, now I'm the kid that runs. I've never been the kid that does push-ups. Look at me, I'm doing push-ups. I've never been the kid that could do a chin-up. Look at me, I'm doing 10. I've never been the kid that was very, very particular about what he put in his mouth. Now I am that kid. I've never been the kid that, and so I just started to do all the things that were new for me. And I said no to things and I learned to delay gratification and I learned to find joy and pleasure in things other than food. So, because what happens when you go from 90 kilos to 60 kilos and fat to fit, and a completely unathletic to a little bit athletic, is yes, your body changes, your physiology changes, but your thinking and your beliefs, your self-belief changes profoundly. Your expectations of yourself change profoundly. Your confidence changes profoundly because you go, oh my God, look what I can do when I change, what I can do when I change my behavior. And so for me, my, you know, like when I did my first degree, I was 36. And for the first semester of my first degree, every day I wanted to quit because every day I was embarrassed and every day I felt like a fraud. I didn't know how to use a computer. I didn't understand university language. I hadn't studied for 18 years. And even when I did study, I didn't even fucking study because I did no work in year 12 in 1981. And then in 2000, when I went to university for the first time, it was terrifying. And from the outside looking in, I was this 36-year-old riding his motorbike to uni, cool as fuck, muscles and shit and all that. But inside I was like a terrified 5-year-old amongst the 18-year-olds who knew how to do everything. I had no understanding of technology. But what happened was by the second semester, I started to get a little bit of awareness and competence and skill. And by the second year, I was going all right. And by halfway through the second year, I'd figured it all out and I became a really fucking good student. And, you know, I killed it academically. But not because I'm brilliant, but because I just worked real hard. But in the middle of that, I went, oh, I can get a degree. I can go to university. I can go to university and know what's going on. I can do assignments. I can do exams. I can do research. I can interpret data. Oh, wow, I can be a scientist. And so, but my belief in myself and my belief in what was possible for me changed through the doing. I think experience changes cognitive default settings. I don't know that. I've never met anyone who's just willed themselves into different belief.
Do you know what's really interesting about, I'm just thinking of when I started boxing and this was so, there's so much clarity around this one in my first fight because it was the first experience. I can feel every moment in the lead up and in the training and everything to that. And I remember how it felt inside my head training for that first fight, being in the gym. And it was like having two voices in my head, two people, two trains. There were like two identities. And there was this one that was so determined and without a shadow of a doubt, obsessed and knew that I will win this fight. Like I am winning this fight. And there was no other way. There was not going to be any other result. But then there was this other very, as equally real, and I was as equally aware of it simultaneously, this other part of me that was like, I am without a doubt the most hideous person in this gym. I am embarrassed. I am the worst at this. People are laughing at me. I shouldn't be here. And there's no way that, you know, but that both of those were there as loud as each other. And I always found that really interesting. And trying to communicate that to people afterwards, I was like, I knew, but there was also this voice. I knew that as well. I knew this and I knew that.
See, I think that's maybe a little bit of that is the you know, it's like we can recognize that we've developed skill and we've got a level of competence and we can be mentally confident to a point, but there's still that emotion, there's still that fear, there's still that 4-year-old or that 10-year-old or there's still that fat kid, there's that, you know, there's that being able to recognize the fear and the anxiety, which is the emotion that comes with the low self-esteem and with the what you think is the underachievement or the fraudulence of trying to, who the fuck are you to be in the gym and all that self-doubt stuff that can coexist with, you know, the knowledge that, no, I've trained really hard. I've developed skill. I'm pretty good at this. I'm not, you know, I'm not Sugar Ray Leonard, but for me, for I'm going to go all right, I'm going to win. You know, there's that. That's why I can get up and do a presentation to 1,000 people and know that it will probably go somewhere between pretty good and really good, not because I'm awesome, but because I've done this a lot of times. So I have the knowledge and I have the experience. And over time, I've developed skill and awareness and an ability to create connection and tell stories and be articulate. So that's all the cognitive, that's all the knowing. But then there's the feeling, which is you're going to fuck this up. Because you're just that fucking ex-fat kid and you've been really lucky till now and you're going to fucking fall over. And I think that, you know, that duality, that internal interaction between the psychology and the emotion of us, I think that's always, you know, ever present. And I think the volume goes down a little bit on the fear-based stuff, but I don't know that it ever totally disappears. Sometimes, you know, it might just switch to something else. Like I don't get, that doesn't happen too much anymore, but now that's converted to my PhD. So now that fear is all about, yeah, but you're going to fuck it up. You stumbled through your first year and you got your approval and your green light, but that's just because they feel sorry for you. You know, I've had all of that, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's normal. And it's, I think the thing is to, you know, in all of this stuff really is to be able to do a stock take on our beliefs and to step back and have, because most of our beliefs developed unconsciously, we didn't choose them. Most of the beliefs that we have right now, doing this podcast, recording this podcast, you and I, or listening to this podcast for the listener, most of the beliefs that we have right now, we never chose. They are just a byproduct of our journey. And the challenge is to recognize the unconscious nature of the development of those, you know? And so what we're doing now is we are consciously acknowledging the unconsciousness of our beliefs. They're just there. They're just there because that was dad's belief and mum's belief, and now it's mine. That was just my coach's belief. This is how I've been taught and told and trained and molded and managed and programmed. It's what my coach tells me. It's what my coach does. And then we become a version of the coach. We become a version of the priest or the pastor or the rabbi, you know, or the guru, you know, whoever it is. That's what we just become, a byproduct of the people and the things that influenced us. And that's not bad. That's human. But the challenge is to go, all right, well, now it's 2021 and I'm a grown ass human. Let me sit back and take a little bit of an account of what my beliefs are and where they come from. And do they work for me or don't they work for me? And did I choose them or did they choose me? And, you know, there's that, like, I believe it because I feel guilty not to believe it. I feel obligated to believe it because mum and dad raised me this way. And so, you know, I believe this because it's really comfortable. You know, there are so many reasons that we have beliefs that reasons other than I actually had this moment, this awareness, I did this kind of exploration, this, I went on this journey, I discovered this, and now I believe this because I've gone down this journey and I've come to this awareness and this belief by myself. There's that versus, no, this is how I was programmed, so this is what I believe.
And we just innately get pulled into it, right? I was just thinking then of, you know, even when I podcast with people and they say something, they make a statement and it reaffirms something that of the way I might think or something I might believe. And I just become aware of how much I get excited about that, because, and it's like, wait, you don't have to get excited. It's just someone that happens to believe something the same as you doesn't affirm that the belief is right. But I still have that, like, yes, because it's confirmation that my belief is right.
Mm.
We're the same. I believe that too. Like, that, it makes it right. And it's like, it makes it no more right. It just means two people have come together and they've got a similar, at the moment, at the time of the conversation, they have a similar idea about something.
And it, and the one of the challenges is that we, you know, we want to belong. We want to be part of a group. We want to be part of a team, part of a tribe, part of a whatever the fucking collective noun for humans that you want to use is, right? Oh, yeah, no, we all over here at our church, our synagogue, our CrossFit box, our fucking whatever, this is what we do. This is how we roll. This is what how we train. This is how we believe. This is how we communicate. This is our vibe. This is our tribe. Fucking giddy up, right? And so there's a compulsion to believe what they believe because you love being part of that group. So you are discouraged from saying, hey, you know, that thing that we all think and, you know, that I don't agree with that. Fucking no one's doing that. No one's putting up their hand at church going, hey, pastor, you know, that whole kind of born again, John 3:16, for God so loved the world, he gave his only, you know, is that like real or is that a story or... Like, nobody's questioning these things.
Hmm.
I'm not saying they should or they shouldn't, by the way, and I only use that because that's my default setting, right? But, you know, I think the thing is to pay attention to people that you respect, and this sounds contrary, not to believe them, but not to distrust them necessarily. It's why I say to people, don't believe me because what I'm saying sounds reasonable or you like me or you trust me. Rather than believing this idea or this construct or this strategy or this thought, take it for a test drive and see if it works. See if this is your truth. See if this is your belief. But don't believe ABC because Craig Harper thinks ABC and you believe in Craig Harper. And don't believe because mum and dad do A, B and C that that has to be your operating system too. You know, and I think this is the awareness of our unconsciousness around belief and to be able to take things for, you know, like I said, a test drive or to be able to put it up on the old metaphoric hoist and have a look at it and get some space from it and say, where does this come from?
Mm.
I think that'll do. Beliefs. You've got them, folks. Think about them. Question them. Do they work for you? Do they serve you? Do they sabotage you? Can you change them? Yes, you can change them. If they're hardwired, you're probably not going to change them quickly. How do you change them? You listen to new things. You open your mind. You have new experiences. You try new things. You open up new doors mentally, emotionally, practically, behaviorally. You put yourself in a different environment, situation, circumstance, in front of different people, and you be open. You be not judgmental, just open, and you be okay with, and this is the challenge, you be okay with being wrong. You be okay with uncertainty and unfamiliarity and unpredictability, and you be okay with relearning and unlearning. And this is the challenge. This is the uncomfortable challenge, because being hardwired in your beliefs and staying there, it's easy, but it doesn't always serve us. The end.
Boom. Harps, I was just wondering
what
if your mentoring program would be a good platform for anyone wanting to work on their beliefs.
Huh. You're an idiot. Look at you doing a promo for me. Oh, hey, Tiff, well, that's amazing.
All of my tribe, you know how many people that I trained at my boxing workshop on Sunday were talking about how excited they were about your 12-week mentoring program?
Well, and they should be. Thanks for asking, Tiff. Yes, kicks off on Feb 15, my mentoring program with... It does. Go to my website. It's 12 weeks. It's going to be good. We talk about all this stuff in some extended form, lots of interaction. It's like a 12-week podcast that you're in the middle of. That's what it's like. CraigHarper.net. Check it out. Events. Buy 10 tickets. Buy 9 for your friends. 1 for your mum. 1 for your dad. And I'll see you all there.
I'll be in the bamboo.
See you, folks.